That's good. You're sure that fellow wasn't acting strange, then? Nothing odd?
The serving woman shook her head, sitting with her arms wrapped around herself. They'd finally managed to get down from the top floor, following the panicked exodus by the rich types. The governor was surrounded by a bubble of guards over to Wayne's left, and a set of strong electric lanterns illuminated the misty night. The green in front of the skyscraper felt right empty now that so many people had left. He figured that would soon change when Marcy returned with some more constables. She'd run off to fetch them and give a report. That meant Wayne was the sole officer of law keeping in the vicinity. A frightening thought.
I've got one more question for you.
Yes, officer?
Where'd you get those shoes?
My shoes?
Yeah, your shoes. Look plenty comfortable, they do. Can never have too many pairs of black pumps. They go with rust and everything.
You're a man.
Sure I am. Checked last time I pissed. The shoes?
Rousseau's, 3rd Octant, on Yeoman Street. They were on sale last week.
Damn, that's beautiful. Thanks. You're free to go.
She gave him that look that people seemed to give only to Wayne, the one he hadn't quite figured. Ah, well. He wrote down the name of the shop. If he had to wear those awful pumps from his disguise box one more time, he'd probably go insane. He popped a ball of gum into his mouth and wandered over toward the pile of guards, going over his notes.
That server up above was not the Condra.
Wayne had talked to a dozen of the staff. All knew the fellow and said he hadn't been acting strange at all, but none of them liked him. He was a screw-up, and none were surprised that he'd turned out to be rotten. An amateur might think that picking the new guy made for a good disguise, but this bleeder, she could be anyone. Why would she pick the low man on the list? Someone who had only joined the staff a few weeks back. Sure, being new would give you an excuse to not know people's names, but by reports, this fellow hadn't forgotten anyone's name tonight. And picking the habitual klutz with a bad reputation would just lead to everyone watching over your shoulder. A terrible choice for an imitator. That guy had been some other kind of mole. He shook his head.
Where's Drim? I want to show him what I've got.
The guard leaned over, looking at Wayne's notepad.
All that's on there is a bunch of scribbles.
It's for show. Makes people talk more if they think you're writing stuff down. Don't know why. I sure wouldn't want anyone remembering the slag I say.
Wayne hesitated, then shoved aside the guard, looking into the middle of the pile. Drim wasn't there, and neither was the governor.
What'd you do with him?
Wayne turned to the others.
It was best everyone thought he was still here. In truth, he and Drim headed to a secure location ages ago. If we fooled you, then hopefully we fooled the assassin.
Fooled? I'm supposed to be protecting the guy.
Well, you're doing a rusting good job of that, mate, ain't you?
Wayne decided to do the only reasonable thing at this moment. He decked the fellow. Wax rarely appreciated the city as much as he did when he needed to get somewhere quickly. To the eyes of a man burning steel, Ellendale was alight and full of motion, even while shadowed by darkness and mist. Metal. In some ways, that was the true mark of mankind. Man tamed the stones, the bones of the earth below. Man tamed the fire, that ephemeral, consuming soul of life. And combining the two, he drew forth the marrow of the rocks themselves, then made molten tools. Wax passed among the skyscrapers like a whisper, the motion drying his clothing. He became just another current in the mists, and moving with him in radial spokes was a majestic network of blue lines, like a million outstretched fingers pointing the way to anchors he could use along his path. When even a galloping horse was too slow, Wax had steel. It burned in him, returning to the fire that gave it shape. From it he drew power. Sometimes that wasn't enough. But this night, he exploded through the lit upper windows of the Harms dwelling, rolling and coming up with guns leveled. Lord Harms swiveled in the chair of his writing desk. Upon seeing Wax, the red-faced older man scrambled to reach into his desk drawer. Wax scanned the room. Nobody else there. No enemies in the corners, no moving bits of metal in closets or the bedroom. He'd arrived in time. Wax stood up as Lord Harms whipped out a pistol, one of the modern semi-autos that were popular with the constables. Harms leaped to his feet and rushed over to Wax, holding his gun in two hands.
Where are they? We can take them. Hey, old boy.
You have a gun.
Yes, indeed. After what happened last year, I realized that a man has to be armed. What's the emergency? I'll have your back.
Wax carefully tipped the point of Lord Harms' gun downward, just in case a bullet was chambered. Because fortunately, the man hadn't locked a magazine into the pistol. Wax glanced behind at the windows. He'd flung them open with a push as he approached, but they were meant to open outward, not inward. He'd ripped both right off their hinges, toppling one while the other hung by its corner. Mist poured in through the opening, flooding the floor. Where was Bleeder? In the house somewhere? Impersonating a maid? A neighbor? A constable passing on the street? Standing in the room with him?
Jaxton, do you remember when you first met me and Wayne was pretending to be my butler?
You mean your uncle?
Good.
An imposter wouldn't know that, would she? Rusts. He'd have to suspect everyone.
You're in danger.
Wax slid his guns into their hip holsters. His suit was basically ruined from the swim in the canal, and he'd tossed aside his cravat, but the sturdy mist coat had seen far worse than this.
I'm getting you out of here.
But my daughter!
Steris is fine. Wayne is watching her. Let's go.
The problem was, go where? Wax had 100 places he could take Harms, but Bleeder could be lurking at any of them. The odds were certainly in Wax's favor, and yet...
Bleeder is ancient. Older than the destruction of the world, she is crafty, careful, and brilliant. She spent centuries studying human behavior.
Any option Wax chose could be the very one Bleeder had predicted he would choose. How did you outthink something so old, so knowledgeable? The solution seemed easy. You didn't try. Steris left Zobel Tower to find Wayne sitting across the street from a huddle of bruised and obviously angry men. Wayne was eating a sandwich.
Oh, Wayne.
She looked at the hostile, wounded men and back to him.
Those are the governor's guards. He's going to need them tonight.
It's not my fault. I was being unaccommodating.
Steris settled down beside him and looked up through the mists toward the tower. She could make out the lights on various floors, glowing like phantoms above, leading all the way up to the very top.
This is how it's going to be with him, isn't it? Always being left behind in the middle of something? Always half feeling as if I'm part of his life?
You could do the noble thing, Steris. Give up on the whole marriage. Let him loose to find someone he actually likes.
And my family's investment in him and his house?
Well, I know this here is revolutionary words, Steris, but you can't loan a chap money without him having to jump you in appreciation, if you know my meaning.
Did he say where he was going?
Nah, he's chasing Bleeder down. Means he could have gone anywhere, and so trying to find him is useless. He'll come back for me when he can. If I leave, I'll just end up missing him.
I see.
Steris settled back, crossing her feet on the curb and staring up at those lights.
Do you hate me because of what I represent, Wayne? The responsibilities that called him back?
I don't hate you. I find you repulsive. That there is an important distinction, it is.
But...
Wayne stood up. He shoved the rest of the sandwich into his mouth. Then he walked over to the guards that were glaring at him and sat down. The implication was obvious. I'd rather be here. Steris closed her eyes, squeezing them shut, and tried to pretend she was someone other than herself for a time. Eventually, the constable carriages arrived. She stood up and composed herself, relieved when Marcy exited one of them and hurried over.
Get in.
Marcy pointed to one of the carriages.
I'm sending you someplace safe.
I think the danger has passed here, unless Wayne is picking fights again.
No, the danger has only just started.
Something's happened, hasn't it?
Wayne, get over here. We've got work to do.
Wax stashed Lord Harms at the very top of Fetter Tower. He'd chosen its location on the city map by picking random numbers. Hopefully Bleeder wouldn't be able to outthink a plan with no thought involved. Harms had instructions to lie low, hide in the darkness, and stay quiet. Even if Bleeder could steel push and search in the night, the chance of her happening upon Harms was ridiculously low, verging on impossible. That didn't stop Wax from worrying. Steris's father was a silly man, but good-natured and amiable. It was the best Wax could do, as he needed to locate the governor. That hunt took Wax longer than he'd have assumed, which was actually a good thing. It meant that Drim, despite his dislike of Wax, was doing his job properly. Best Wax could determine, they had sent at least 3 unmarked carriages away from Zobel Tower. 2 decoys and 1 with the governor inside. He spotted one on Stanton Way and dismissed it. Too obvious, with the guards riding on top. Guessing that another had gone east, he found it driving around in a circle in the 3rd octant, also trying to draw attention. It was moving too slowly. Besides, the governor wouldn't go that way. Innate was a fighter. He wouldn't want to be seen hiding. So it was that Wax found himself perched on the top of a building near Hammond Promenade, a few streets from Innate's own mansion. He'd return here, eschewing safe houses in the city. He'd want to be in his center of power and authority. The mists seemed to glow here in the city, lit by a thousand lights, an increasing number of them electric. It took long enough for the carriage to arrive that Wax was starting to second-guess himself. But arrive it did. A tall, topped, enclosed coach with red curtains. Yes, it was quite nondescript. The horses, however, were from the governor's prized breeding stock, just like the two decoys. Wax shook his head as he jumped and pushed his way to the top of the stone archway outside the First Insurance Bank. The coach moved at a fair clip and held no obvious guards. They must have taken a very roundabout way to take so long to reach here. Wax pushed on a streetlight, hurling himself after the governor's coach. He landed on its top and nodded to the surprised coachman, then swung down alongside the vehicle, hanging by one arm above the blur of cobblestones beneath. After a few moments, the window shade opened, revealing Drim's surprised face.
Ladrian, what the hell are you doing?
Being polite. May I come in?
What if I refuse?
Then I stop being polite.
Drim sneered but glanced to the side, where the governor rode with his hat in his lap. The man nodded and turned back to the door. As Drim opened the door, Wax grabbed the edge of the roof and swung into the vehicle. Wax took the seat opposite Drim and the governor. Drim would be a perfect person to imitate, as would the carriage driver, as would basically anyone with access to the governor, including his wife and family.
Lord Ladrian, breaking up the party wasn't enough for you. You have to harass me on the way home from it as well.
Wax shrugged, then moved to climb back out of the carriage.
What are you doing now, you fool?
Leaving? There are thousands of places I could be right now, most of them more pleasant.
He hesitated, then pulled out one of his Sterions and flipped it in his hand, holding it grip first to the governor.
Here.
Why would I need a gun? I have bodyguards.
So did your brother. Take it. I'll feel guilty when you get shot if I haven't done something.
Shot? My brother was killed because of his flirtations with the underbelly of Ellendale. They wouldn't dare touch me.
I'm sure they wouldn't.
Wax leaned out the door, hesitated, then looked back in.
You know how to spot a Chandra, right, Drim?
A what?
Those are myths.
Are they? Then the one I met tonight must have been lying. Not sure how she made her skin transparent, though. Oh, well, guess you have it in hand.
You mean to tell me that one of the faceless immortals was at my party tonight?
Two, actually. One came to help. I would introduce you, have her prove her nature to you, but it does seem to me that your mind is made up. The other one at the party was the person who killed your brother. You sure you don't want a gun? No? All right,
I'll just made your point, Lord Waxillium.
My lord, this is stupid. The faceless immortals? Every second person claims to have met one just to get their stones in the broadsheets. You're not really considering these claims, are you?
Innate studied Wax.
He is, because he knows something strange happened to his brother. Killed in his safe room, guards murdered from behind by someone they trusted, and Winsting Innate took his security very seriously. More seriously than you do, I suspect, Mr. Governor.
You can introduce me to one of the creatures? Offer me proof of their existence?
Yes.
But why would one of Harmony's own servants kill Lord Winsting?
The Chandra has gone insane. We don't know her motives yet, but she does seem to want you dead, Mr. Governor. So my job is to keep you alive.
What do we do? How do we prepare?
Well, first I take over your security.
Like hell you do.
Your taking over is impossible. Drim has served me well for years. Where are you going?
There's a play I wanted to see tonight. Figure I'd go catch the tail end while you two discuss this.
And if this creature comes for me while you're gone?
I'm sure your head of security can deal with it. He knew the Chandra were at the party tonight, didn't he? And he almost certainly didn't miss Wayne slipping in wearing a disguise.
You may review my security protocols and offer advice.
Fine.
Wax pulled the door closed as the carriage turned a corner and approached the governor's mansion.
But you have to agree to one thing right now. I'm going to give you both a passphrase, and I want you both to vow not to share it with anyone, not even each other or Lady Innate. You'll also give me a passphrase. When we meet, we'll exchange them in a whisper, which will prove that none of us have been replaced.
You honestly think I wouldn't know my own wife?
I'm sure you would, but this is a requirement of my aid, and you must humor me. It will put my mind at ease.
The family was most dangerous. Bleeder had sounded so confident, as if she had the governor in hand, which made Wax think the creature had already gotten to one of the family. Lady Innate hadn't been at the party, but Harmony had said Bleeder could swap bodies whenever she wished. Rust and ruin, what an awful spot to be in. Bleeder could have killed a niece or nephew, a toddler even, and be planning to imitate one of them to get to the governor. In the Historica, Chandra imitated animals. The house pets could secretly be assassins. Wax glanced at the governor, who looked profoundly disturbed, his hands clasped, eyes staring as if to see 1,000 miles. The implications of it were sinking in. Innate wasn't an idiot, just an egotist, and possibly a crook. The carriage pulled up to the mansion, and Drim climbed out. As Wax followed, the governor took him by the arm.
I will want to see this proof of yours, ruffian.
I'll arrange a meeting tomorrow.
Tonight.
Wax nodded.
If this is true, what do we do? I've read the words of Founding. I know what the immortals were capable of. Ruin. This creature could be anyone. Passphrases won't be enough, not nearly.
They won't. Sir, the thing has access to the metallic arts, too. At any time, she could be anything from a pulser to an archivist. Though she can only carry one at a time without risking loss of control, she can swap the powers out at will.
Great Harmony. How do you stop something like that?
Frankly, I don't know. You should probably already be dead.
Why am I not?
The governor waved back Drim, who had peeked in to check on them.
This creature could have killed me as easily as she did my brother.
She seems to have some kind of agenda, bigger than you. She might not want to bring you down until doing so topples the city government entirely. Sir, you might want to leave Ellendale.
Leave? Have you seen what is going on in the city? Labor strikes, food prices skyrocketing. Too many men from one job out of work, too many from another demanding to be treated better. Rusts, there are practically riots in the streets, man. And the scandal. I can't leave. My career would be over.
Better than your life being over.
Leaving is impossible. It would look like I'm abandoning the people. They'd think the scandal drove me into hiding. I'd be perceived as a coward. No, impossible. I will send Lady Innate to safety, as well as the children. I must stay, and you must deal with this thing, whatever it is. Stop it before it can go any further.
I'll try. Give me a passphrase to authenticate myself. Something memorable, but nonsensical.
Leavening on sand.
Good. Mine for you is bones without soup. You have a safe room?
Yes, in the bottom of the mansion, beneath the sitting room.
Set up in there.
Wax climbed out of the carriage.
And if you lock the door, don't let anyone in until I arrive and can give you the passphrase.
Wax found himself pulling out Vindication. He leveled the gun before he registered what had set him off. A servant hastened out of the governor's mansion, passing pillars on the front lit stark white like a line of femurs.
My lord governor, we've had a telenote through the wire. Something has happened. You're going to need to prepare a response.
What is it?
The governor climbed from the carriage. The servant hesitated, eyes widening at Wax's gun. She wore a sharp black suit, skirt to the ankles, red scarf at the neck. A steward, or perhaps one of the governor's advisors.
I'm a constable. What is the emergency?
A murder!
Not Lord Harms. Please tell me.
Lord who? It wasn't a nobleman at all, constable.
The woman glanced at Drim, who nodded. Wax could be trusted. She looked back to Wax.
It was Father Bin, the priest!
Marisie stared up at the corpse, which had been nailed to the wall like an old drapery. One spike through each eye. Blood painted the man's cheeks and had soaked into the white ceremonial robes, forming a crimson vest, almost like a terrace V. Blood stained the wall on either side of the corpse as well, smeared there by thrashing arms and fingers. Marisie shivered. The priest had been alive as this happened. Though constables poked and prodded at the large nave of the church, Marisie felt alone, standing before that corpse and its steel eyes. Just her and the body, a disturbingly reverent scene. It reminded her of something out of the Historica, though she couldn't remember what. Captain Aradel stepped up beside her.
I've had word of your sister. We've got her in one of our most secure safe houses.
Thank you, sir.
What do you make of it?
It's ghastly, sir. What exactly happened?
The conventicalists are being very helpful. I'm not sure if they're in shock or if they see our intrusion here as offensive.
He gestured for her to go before him, and they passed Wayne, who sat in one of the pews, chewing gum and looking up at the body. Marisie and Aradel exited the domed nave and entered a small foyer where a row of ashen-faced people sat on some benches. They were conventicalists, those who worked in a survivorist church, aside from the priest. A gray-haired woman sat at their head, wearing the formal dress of a church matron. She wiped her eyes, and several youths huddled against her, eyes down. Constable Reddy stood nearby. The lean man tucked his clipboard under his arm and saluted Aradel. Normally, this wasn't the sort of thing a constable general would be involved in, but Aradel had been a detective for many years.
Will you be handling the interrogation yourself, sir?
No.
Very good, sir.
Reddy pulled his bow tie tight and took out his clipboard. He stepped up to the conventicalists.
Actually, I was thinking we'd let Lieutenant Combs try.
Marcy felt a sharp spike of panic, which she smothered immediately. She wasn't afraid of a simple interrogation, particularly with amiable witnesses. But the way Aradel said it so seriously made her suddenly feel as if it were some type of test. Wonderful. She pushed past Reddy, who had lowered his clipboard and was eyeing her. The assembled group of eight people sat with slumped shoulders. How to best approach them? They'd described to a sketch artist what had happened, but details could separate ruin from preservation. Marcy settled down on the bench between the two of them.
My condolences on your loss. My apologies, too. The constabulary has failed you this day.
It's not your fault. Who could have anticipated? Holy survivor, I knew those Pathians were a miscreant bunch. I always knew it. No rules, no precepts to guide their lives.
Chaos. They want nothing but chaos.
What happened? I've read the report, of course, but... Rusts. I can't imagine.
We were waiting for evening celebration. The mists had put in quite the appearance. Must have been almost 1,000 people in the dome for worship. And then he just sauntered up to the dais, that Pathian mongrel.
Did you recognize him?
Of course I did. It was that Larskpor. We see him at community functions all the time. People feel they have to invite a Pathian priest, as if to not show favoritism, though nobody wants them around.
Little wretch of a man, barely fit his robes. Nothing ornate, really, just a smock. They don't even dress up to worship.
He started talking to the crowd, like he was going to give the Miss Dawn sermon. Only it was vile stuff he spouted.
Such as what?
Blasphemy. But it shouldn't matter. Look here, Constable. Why are you even talking to us? 1,000 people saw him. Why are you treating us like we did something wrong? You should be off arresting that monster.
We have people hunting for him.
Marcy rested her hand on the shoulder of one of the children. The little girl clamped onto her arm.
And I promise you, we'll catch and punish the one who did this. But every detail you can remember will help us put him away.
The matron and the underpriest glanced at each other. But it was one of the others, a lanky alderman in his 20s, who spoke.
Larskpor said that the survivor was a false god, that Kelsier had tried and failed to help humankind, that his death hadn't been about protecting us or ascending, but about stupidity and bravado.
It's what they've always thought, but don't say. Those Pathians, they claim to accept everyone, but if you push, you can see the truth. They mock the survivor.
They want chaos. They hate that so many people look to the survivor. They hate that we have standards. They have no meetings, no churches, no commandments. The path isn't a religion, it's a platitude.
It stunned us, I'll tell you that. I thought at first that Father Bin must have invited Larskpor to speak. Why else would he be so bold as to step up to the pulpit? I was so horrified by what he said that I didn't notice the blood at first.
I did. I thought he was wearing gloves. I stared at those fingers, waving, bright red. And then I noticed the drops that he was flicking across the floor in the pulpit as he gestured.
There isn't anything more to say. Larskpor gestured one last time and the back draping fell down. There he was. Our blessed father, nailed there in a terrible parody of the survivor's state mark. Poor Father Bin had been hanging the whole time. Might have been still alive, bleeding and dying while we all listened to that blasphemy.
Marcy doubted that. Though the priest had obviously struggled at first, the spikes would have ended that quickly.
Thank you. You've been very helpful.
She carefully pried the little girl's hands from her arm and passed her to the matron. Marcy stood, walking to Aradel and Reddy, who stood on the other side of the room.
What do you think?
About the information or your interrogation techniques?
Either.
That wasn't how I'd have done it. But I suppose that you did put them at ease.
They didn't offer much.
What did you expect? Captain, this had to be the same person who killed Winsting.
Don't jump to conclusions. What would be the motive?
Can you explain this any other way?
Marcy gestured toward the room with the dead priest.
A Pathian? Murdering? Sir, their priests are some of the least aggressive people on the planet. I've seen toddlers more dangerous.
Ready? Go get these conventiculists something to drink. They could use a warm mug right now, I'd suspect.
Sir?
You've been spending so much time at the gun range you've gone deaf? Be about it, Captain. I need to talk to Constable Combs.
Reddy's glare at Marcy could have boiled water, but he moved off to do as ordered.
Sir, I can't help noticing that you're determined to see the rest of the constables hate me.
Nonsense. Just giving the boy a nudge. He's useless when he isn't trying to show off for me. Those weeks when he thought he had the assistant's position sewn up were miserable. He's a better officer when he has somebody to compete with.
Arundel took Marcy by the shoulder and steered her away from the seated conventicalists. A junior corporal had just shown up with blankets and mugs of warm tea. Hopefully, Reddy wouldn't be too put out at having that job stolen from him, too.
I can't fight mist wraiths and spirits in the night. I'm a watchman, not an exorcist.
I understand that, sir.
On their ride over here, she had told him what Waxillium had said about Bleeder. She wasn't about to keep information like that from her superior.
But if the criminal is supernatural, what option do we have?
I don't know, and that frustrates me to no end. I've got a city dry as a pile of autumn leaves, Lieutenant, and it's about to go up in flames. I don't have the manpower to hunt down a fallen immortal. I need to have constables on the streets trying to keep this city from consuming itself.
Sir, what if the two are related?
The two murders?
The murders and the unrest, sir.
Marcy closed her eyes, remembering the chapel with its dome and pews, and tried to imagine it as it had been earlier. Larkspur standing in front and waving his hands, horrified parishioners fleeing and burying the story that the Pathian leader had murdered a survivorist priest.
Bleeder, or whoever is behind this, has distracted the government with a scandal. Now she strikes at one church leader in the guise of another? Sir, whatever her real motives are, she's obviously trying to strain Ellendale. She wants this city to break.
You might be ascribing too much to one person, Lieutenant.
Not just a person. A demigod. Sir, what started the worker strikes?
Hell if I know.
Arundel patted at his pocket and took out his cigar case. He opened it and found only a little folded note. He grimaced and showed it to her. There's a banana in your drawer.
Damn woman will be the death of me. Anyway, I suspect the strikes have been building for a while. Harmony knows I sympathize with the poor fools. Get paid like dirt while the house lords live in mansions and penthouses.
But why now? It's the food, right? Suddenly spiked prices, worry that even when the strikes end, there won't be food to be bought?
That certainly hasn't helped. Those floods are going to be a strain.
A broken dam? Did we investigate that properly?
You think that could have been sabotage?
Could be worth checking.
Could be indeed. I'll see if I can spare some men, but if you're right, what's this creature's endgame?
General mayhem?
Maybe it's different from mist wraiths, but men who do things like this, they do it to prove something. They want to show how clever they are, or they want to stop an injustice. Maybe she just wants to bring someone down. Isn't the governor a Pathian?
I think so.
So this murder tonight could be an attempt to discredit his religion. Kill his brother, expose a scandal, undermine his faith, cause riots during his tenure. Rusts. This could be about making sure that Innate doesn't just die, he gets stomped to the ground.
Sir, I might have proof that the governor is corrupt.
What? What kind of proof?
Nothing definitive. It has to do with his policies, and when he's changed his mind on bills, when he's voted irregularly following visits with certain key individuals. Sir, you said you hired me in part because of my ability to read statistics. I'll show you what I have once it's all arranged, but the story the governor's record tells is of a man who is offering himself up for sale.
Arundel ran a hand through his hair, red, flecked with gray.
Harmony. Keep this quiet, Lieutenant. We'll worry about it another time. Understand?
Yes, sir. And I agree.
But good work.
Arundel jogged over to take crime scene reports. Marcy couldn't help feeling a thrill that he'd listened to what she'd said, even when all she could offer was half explanations. At the same time, however, a disturbing thought struck her. What if Arundel was secretly the Chandra somehow? How much damage could Bleeder do if she had an entire Octon's constables under her thumb? No, Aradel had been around people when the priest was murdered. Rusts. The creature would have Marcy jumping at shadows, wondering if everyone she met was a Chondra. She went to get herself a cup of that tea, hoping it would help her banish the image in her head of poor Father Bin hung from the wall. She wasn't halfway to the table with the flasks before the doors to the foyer opened and Waxillium strode in. He trailed tassels like the curling mists, his powerful stride prompting lesser constables to scuttle out of his way. How was it that he could so fully encapsulate everything the constables should be, but weren't? Noble without being pandering, thoughtful yet proactive, unyielding yet inquisitive. Marcy smiled, then hurried after him. It wasn't until they reached the chapel, with its large glass dome and the dead priest hanging on the far side, that she realized she'd forgotten entirely about getting tea. A headache still thumped inside her skull. Aradel stood inside the nave, accompanied by two young constables.
Lord Ladrian, we'll have a report on the body ready for
I'll
you.
I'll see for myself, Constable. Thank you.
He dropped a bullet casing and rose into the air, soaring over rows of pews beneath the dome to land on the dais. Aradel turned to one of the corporals.
See that his lordship gets whatever he needs. Maybe he can make something of this damn mess, assuming he doesn't just shoot the place up instead.
The young constable nodded, then ran to join Waxillium, who was saying something to Wayne, who had stepped up to join him. Whatever Waxillium said sent the shorter man scuttling out the doors on some errand. The constable general shook his head, a sour grimace on his lips.
Sir, you're upset with Lord Waxillium?
Pay no heed, Lieutenant. His lordship is a great resource to this department.
Sir, that has the sound of a practiced answer to it.
Good. Because it took me a long time to learn to say it without cursing.
Could I have the non-practiced version?
Let's just say that it must be damn nice, Lieutenant, to have other people to clean up your messes for you.
Aradel nodded to her, then stalked from the room. Rusts. Was that how Aradel saw Waxillium? A rogue nobleman accustomed to getting what he wanted? Blunt in ways that Aradel could never be? The Constable General wasn't a nobleman, and had to worry about funding, politics, the future of his men. Waxillium could just butt in and do what he liked, shooting and letting his status, both as an Allomancer and a House Lord, get him out of it. That perspective was eye-opening. Waxillium was a trouble. A worthwhile trouble, as he did get things done, but almost as bad as the problems he solved. But for that brief moment, he seemed less an ally and more a storm that you had to prepare for and clean up after. Disturbed, she walked up through the room to join him beside the body.
Those spikes give off strong lines.
Waxillium pointed at Father Bin's ruined face.
To my allomantic senses, I mean. From what I've read, I think that means they're not hemallergic spikes. Those are supposed to be tough to see and push on, like metal mines.
What would spiking him accomplish?
No idea. Still, when you get that body down, send me a sample of metal from each spike. I want to run some tests on their composition.
All right.
We should have seen it. She's trying to drive a wedge between the Pathians and the Survivorists.
The governor is Pathian. We think Bleeder is trying to get at him.
You're right, but that's not her true goal. She wants to overthrow the city. Perhaps the governor's murder will be the capstone. But what does this have to do with me?
Everything doesn't have to be about you, you know.
Not everything. Just this.
Annoyingly, he was probably right. Why else would Bleeder be parading around the city wearing the body of the man who had killed Waxillium's wife? Waxillium left the corpse, pushing out of the building through the rear exit. There, a narrow alleyway led out to the street. Marcy followed, joining Waxillium in the darkness and mists.
What are you doing?
You don't plan a dramatic murder like this one without preparing an escape route. From the discarded handkerchiefs and handbags left behind, I'd guess the room was full when she revealed the body. The worshippers ran out the main doors, and the murderer would have expected this. She would have come out the back, getting away while everyone was either fleeing or stunned.
Okay.
Narrow alley.
Waxillium knelt to inspect the wall.
Look at this.
Marcy squinted. The bricks along the wall here had been scraped, leaving behind something that had rubbed off on them.
Looks metallic. Silvery.
Paint, I'd guess. Where it came from is a small question, unfortunately, compared to the larger ones. Why would she kill this priest in the first place? She warned me she was going to. I thought she meant your father, not Father Bin.
Waxillium, we need more information about what this creature can do and what its motives might be.
Agreed.
Waxillium rose and stared down the alleyway.
I'd like to ask God a few hard questions.
I doubt he's going to make himself available, however, so we'll have to settle for somebody else.
Who?
I had some help tonight from an unexpected source. I have a feeling that an interview with her will be illuminating. Want to come?
Of course I do. Why wouldn't I?
Well, I'm worried that interacting with her might prove theologically difficult.